ओमिगानितिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानंजनाशलाकय अक्षुरुन्मृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. वंशकौपातरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभयेभ्यः च पतितानं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृन्द. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. So greetings from New Jersey. Quite a busy week, and I'm staying here a few days to prepare my bhakti course in for the yoga teacher training at Yoga Maya. I have a 6 hours seminar on Sunday. So it's a challenge, actually, because you're explaining your own tradition in the frame of reference of people who don't yet have a highly developed frame of reference in either yoga philosophy or bhakti. So, really trying to read different things and see how I can present it. And I'm going to continue what I've been doing on Wednesday. It's been really, really helpful for me that before I give a class, I can speak it here. It's very, very helpful for me to do that. And on last Thursday, I remember really successful when I was able to speak on the bhakti story. So, of course, I'm not going to speak 6 hours now, but I'll just basically give you my my take on what I'm actually going to say. I'm going to have to leave a lot of questions, which is really unusual for me. As you know, I weak on the questioning side because I tend to. There's always, to me, always seems a short time to explain a lot. But dialectic is extremely important because all our main scriptures are in dialectic. And what dialectic allows one to do, it allows the teacher to understand by the questions of the audience their frame of reference. It allows the teacher to understand what further is required in the student's frame of reference to understand the subject matter that you're presenting. Just like when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he had to speak in a certain way, perhaps different than he spoke in India, because the audience didn't have a frame of reference of the culture of India. And as it's a seminar, you know, when you speak for an hour and a half, et cetera, there can be an element of, I don't know how you can call it, entertainment. But, you know, the students are there to learn. And you can get into the depths of the philosophy. I thought, though, to make it personal, I would tell my own story first of coming to Krishna consciousness. Technically, not technically, but it's a principle not to talk about oneself. But we do have the example in Bhagavatamrita that the Brahmin tells Gop Kumar his own story as the story of his particular journey would be helpful and relevant to those who wanted to pursue the same journey. But I think always when you are speaking, you have to develop a rapport with the audience. And one way that the audience identifies with you is if they see that the subject and problems that you're going to be discussing are something that you yourself either are confronting or have confronted. So I think it's relevant. How does one develop bhakti? And in my own story, it's by objects of devotion. Because we have a natural relationship, with the divine. So when we are confronted with the divine, that natural relationship, that attachment in our soul, which is the very, very nature of the soul, it begins to awaken. In Sanskrit, that is called Shraddha or faith. Shraddha of faith is a trust in the subliminal, sublime result of associating or doing a particular thing. I'm taking some notes here because. Oops. And basically, I'm not going to elaborate it now, but somehow or other, by the mercy of Guru, mercy of the sadhus, mercy of the holy name, perhaps mixed with some previous sukriti, some impressions or inclination to serve God. At a particular time when one is ready or vulnerable, then coming in contact with the divine in the form of the name, in the form of his devotees, in the form of the foodstuffs offered in love and devotion to him. The nature of my soul manifest. That's what faith is, the nature of your soul, and that's bhakti. And what is the nature of the soul? The nature of the soul is to love God. Not a sectarian faith, but it's the nature of the soul. I mean, in a true religion, true spiritual path, It's not about a faith, it's about religion is not a faith, it's the nature, it's your nature, your eternal nature, your spiritual nature. So that type of attraction or attachment that love for the divine. But when it's love for the divine, it creates a love or affection in your heart. It should, which is reflected to everything. So I think my story would be somewhat relevant. And to make one open to those objects of devotion, then one wants to have some faith, not faith in the relationship with God, but also faith in the teachings that represent some type of comprehensive understanding of the world, where you can it's good that I'm giving a class, because it enables me to get my thoughts clear. I'm sorry, this is the first time I've ever done I'm taking notes. Sorry, I never did this before, but so you develop faith in a particular experience, but in the teachings that guide that experience and guide your perception and relationship with the, in other words, Dharma. You come in contact with Dharma, a comprehensive understanding of what should one do to affect one's soul. Okay, what I'm trying to do here is get some connection between experience and philosophy and faith. Ultimately, our faith is an experience. An experience of some sublimity related to some activity. But it's also related to a philosophy of understanding things and reacting to things that creates that experience. So I think when people come to spiritual life, and what a spiritual experience is, what a faith is in this type, it's some type of overwhelming joy related to a devotion and rapture that comes to your heart in terms of an overwhelming experience. So it was really quite overwhelming for me, I have to explain. And these two things, it was an experience, but there was an understanding of things and our relationship to things, to open our heart and invoke that experience. It's like one has a faith in a doctor. Why have a faith in a doctor? You have faith in a doctor because they have knowledge that gives you a particular experience of health. So I'd like to explain that. And then give a philosophical introduction to bhakti, and perhaps describe how one comes to spiritual life in general. When one understands that the manipulation of the environment doesn't give one happiness, but it's the shape or mode of the mind that gives one happiness. And therefore, one starts to seek happiness in a deeper way. Because one could see that no matter which way one manipulates matter, because it's temporary and it's superficial, that it ultimately will not give one happiness. And you have to come to that platform because it's an experience. And it's an experience of the duality in matter, an experience of the superficiality of matter. And either you can hanker for some environmental change, but generally, even when you attain it, this happiness still eludes you. So, and therefore, one will come into an intelligent person will come to a point in his life where he'll question what is the appropriate thing to do, to respond to my environment, to respond to the world. It's certainly not just trying to shape it according to my desires. It must be something transcendent, something deeper. Or at least I've explored and exhausted the attempt to become happy by aligning the world with my desires, which requires an element of control that is way beyond one. So then one seeks a transcendent or a deeper thing. And then one begins to question, well, what is the proper response to realize that the soul, to realize the soul? And that's what yoga is. Yoga is a very simple definition. The cause of suffering is ignorance. And what is ignorance? When the pure, eternal, suffering, though, when the pure, eternal, blissful soul identifies with the temporary and impure body, it's the identification that causes the suffering, not the actuality of one's situation that causes the suffering. So when one has this understanding, one has some faith in this knowledge, then how to get to that point? And that's what yoga is. That's what yoga is. So what I want to present is what I want to present is first the Gita to show without question that the conclusion of the Gita is devotional yoga, that the topmost yoga is surrendering to the absolute reality, to the universal interest, above the individual interest. But individual interest doesn't mean that we don't satisfy our desires, because that may be the universal interest, that our desires have to be fulfilled for the higher goal of self-realization. So that type of surrender, giving oneself, giving up the independent or selfish mind and serving the divine. That's the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Many, many yogas are described, many, many ways of doing it. But it comes to yoginam api sarvesham madgate nataratmanam shudhapam bhajateyo mam. So that of all yogis, one who worships me with faith and devotion is the highest of all. And then I like to present it through yoga, because people, that's where their faith is. They just study the Yoga Sutras for 15, 12 hours with Professor Bryant. So what is Ishvara Pranidhan? That would have come. The Bhagavad Gita comes to that conclusion. Ishvara Pranidhan. That you have to give your life to God. That's the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. That you have to surrender to God. And surrender to God means to act for the pleasure of that divine absolute reality. And the pleasure of that absolute reality is the mood of love for the absolute reality, the mood of service for the absolute reality. So discuss Ishvara Pranidhan, and that's mentioned in the Yoga Sutras. It's mentioned three times
at the beginning.
Okay. Ishvara Pranidhan is mentioned three times. It's mentioned at the very beginning as an option to meditation. Ishvara Pranidhan is mentioned as a mandatory, one of the three mandatory actions to purify the mind for yoga, including tapasya, swadhyaya, and Ishvara Pranidhan. And it's mentioned along with cleanliness, contentment, etc., one of the niyams, one of the obligatory steps in yoga, how you relate to others. So Ishvara Pranidhan is mentioned, surrender to God. And it mentions how you surrender to God. You surrender to God by devotionally chanting the names that designate God. So Ishvara Pranidhan is one of the, it's mentioned at the very, very beginning. It says how to do it. You worship with devotion. You with respect, you think of the meaning. And what's the meaning? The meaning is, of what is the meaning of Om? It's Ishvara Pranidhan. You think of the meaning of Ishvara, the meaning of God, that you surrender to God. And you chant in that mode of surrendering to the mantra and praying for that. So it's mentioned at the very beginning, as where it says yoga means to meditate on an object, so it recommends to meditate on God. And the commentaries of the acharyas who commented on that talk so much about the efficacy of meditating on God, because when you meditate on the object of the divine, that object has an ability to reciprocate with your effort and make your effort successful. Because what you're meditating on, Ishvara, is the controller of the things, the obstacles that prevent you from controlling, which is the modes of material nature. And when it mentions niyam, all the yams and niyams, there's a result of perfecting it. But in all the niyams, from, you know, getting a duration of life, being able to see the past, accrue opulence, so many things, all the benefits are prakritic or material. So Ishvara Pranidhan, the benefit of that niyam is spati or the goal. So it makes common sense if you're going to choose an object of meditation to steady the mind. And one object of meditation just serves as a prop to steady the mind. And the other object of meditation has the potency and power to give you the desired goal of meditation or samadhi. It becomes really clear what is actually being recommended. And that's attested because of all the objects of meditation, because Patanjali is just dealing with psychology. Of all the objects of meditation, there's only one object of meditation that has the potency to remove obstacles. So a lot of those acharyas, they talk about the potency of mercy. So that's basically at least my beginning strategy. I'm not going into detail now. I think if you can hang on, I think the class will get more interesting, because I see the problem is that I'm just summing things up that I actually should go into depth. And it's interesting also to talk about the concept of God, because it's not just the body. School. Four or five of the six philosophical schools in India are theistic, which mean they accept the eternality of the soul. They accept the eternality of the soul. And they accept its eternal distinction from the divine. There's oneness for sure. Everything is of the same substance. But within that oneness, there's also a type of differentiation for the purpose of love. So I really also want to establish, I can see this subject is much too long. If I was really giving class, I should just give, I think I'll get on to more interesting stuff. Now, I want to explain what is bhakti. And first, to explain what is bhakti, you have to establish that there's God, because without a object, there can be no bhakti. If there's only subject, what is bhakti? So impersonal is there's only subject. There's no distinction. So I'll explain some bandhigyan, et cetera. But okay, let's get to this now. Definition of bhakti. Bhakti is the natural inclination of the soul to serve God. That's what bhakti is. And in Jiva Dharma, a very wonderful book, it describes it as Nitya Dharma. Nitya Dharma means what? The quality you have which cannot be taken away. And what is that? It's bhakti. It's devotion. It's there. It's the nature of the soul to serve and love. Why? Because by nature, the soul is part of the divine, and the function of a part is to serve the whole. And what is served? It means to please. So ultimately, service is bhakti. Because it's devotion which is pleasure. We see that principle here. So it's the inclination of the soul. It's its dharma. It's its real nature. And the practice of bhakti is to act purely in a mood of service towards God. It's the nature of the soul. So when you act devotionally, then somehow or other that invokes the spirit of the soul. The only example I've given is Prabhupada gave, like a child learning to walk. What does the child do who learns to walk? How does he learn to walk? By trying to walk. So how do you develop the nature of the soul? Well, you try to act spiritually. And acting spiritually is to act selflessly. It's to act in a mood of service. Anyabhilashita shindam dana karma dhyanabhitam anukuyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttamam. So what is bhakti? It's shilanam. Shilanam means activities, either the mind, either the body, either the words. Anu shilanam. That follow the will of the divine. You follow someone's will when you want to satisfy them. So it's anukuyena, the intention to please. Anyabhilashisa sunyam, again, without any motive. That's bhakti. And serving God means the universal interest. And the universal interest doesn't deny serving individuals. But it's linking up with that universal interest. And when you act on that platform, it draws out the nature of the soul. Two things draw out the nature of the soul. One is acts of devotion. The other is objects of devotion. But turning to objects of devotion is an act of devotion itself. Mayasakta manoparta yogam yunjam marasvaya. Oh, Arjuna, just here. Consciousness of me. By being conscious of the divine. Anyasimashita shunyam jnana karma dhinabhitam anukul. When you become conscious, then you become attached. And what is that attachment? It's the nature of the soul. Because we're part of God and we have a relationship. To be attached in natural relationships is very natural. But our eternal relationship is with the divine. So acts of devotion and objects of devotion. When you think of the divine, then your natural love for the divine comes out. And then I was going to explain the processes of devotion. Here's my basic strategy. I can see it's very difficult to give this class because I can't really get into anything. It's not really, you know, to give a format or a structure of the class. But basically what I want to do is the first 3 hours, I wanted to find what is bhakti and what are the practices of bhakti. And the next 3 hours, I actually want to do bhakti, especially focus on kirtan and japa. Beginning with surrender. You can't have an independent mind if you want devotion. Independent mind, thinking of yourself, is not love. Of course, you can think of yourself in relationship to service by satisfying your needs so that you can serve. But to have a completely independent mind, so you have to surrender. Sharanagati. You take shelter. And what are you taking shelter in? You're taking shelter in an object of devotion. We're looking to be satisfied in heart. And when you have shraddha or faith, then you feel that that satisfaction will come when I repose my consciousness, when I surrender to the divine. That's what I'm missing. That's what actually needs to be nourished. To be nourished, it needs a proper object of devotion. It needs a proper object to be nourished. So your surrender means sharanagati. You're taking refuge. You're taking shelter that in that activity, I am satisfied. The example of the hand. The hand serves the body, and it has full faith by taking shelter of the body, by serving the body, by loving the body, then that's the best position for oneself. And that begins with guru. And it begins with guru because the spiritual master, the genuine spiritual master, he loves God and therefore carries the desire of God. And therefore, by serving and pleasing the spiritual master, one is surrendering to Krishna. Anyway, I have to be frank with you that the format for today's class is challenging because I have an outline for 6 hours, and just to go over it doesn't allow me to get spontaneous, and I should have just went over one aspect of it, but it was essential for me to do this. Let's see what I can do here. Well, I'll just share you something that Lakshmi Nisringas told me. He sent me from Chaitanya's Sikshasamrita, 5 ways of cultivating bhakti. With the body, the mind, the soul, matter, and society. I'm trying to figure it out, but the body, hearing, chanting, seeing, touching, using the body, the mind, remembrance, meditation, surrender, servitude, inquiry. The soul, surrender, rejecting personal pleasure, following path of previous devotees. Matter deals with the place, the time, and society. Festive gatherings of elevated devotee, raising a Vaishnav family, spreading Vaishnav Dharma, increasing Vaishnav population. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to shut my notes now. Okay? And I'm going to close my eyes and just try to sum up. I really want to explain bhakti. And bhakti is the inclination of the soul. It's its nature. It's the nature of the soul. And the nature of the soul is to serve God and surrender to God, because you can't serve with an independent mind. And somehow or other you're averse to doing that, then your nature as a servant of God becomes covered. And the reality or existence of God also becomes covered. So, the practice of bhakti is actually the nature of the soul when it's purely reflected in the consciousness. That's why sometimes bhakti is described Brahma Bhuta Pasanatmana Sochati Nakanchati Samasadeshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhakti Labhati Param. That bhakti is after jnana. Why? Because it's the reflection of the soul in the mind. And when the reflection of the soul, which is to love God and to serve God, what basically we practice that by doing acts of devotion and trying to associate with objects of devotion. So we develop impressions for service, for serving God, for attraction to God. And that type of mind, when it's expressed in acts of devotion, it attracts the mercy of the divine in reciprocation. So, this absorption in the divine by acts of devotion, it brings out the nature of the soul. Yeah. Okay, it's about 10 to 9. That's really about best I can do today. Are there any questions? Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Gail again.
Okay, Gail. This was a challenging class. You know, I've given 500 classes on Wednesday and Sunday, so you've heard about 500 classes over the years. Anyway, I'm going to be more vigilant to prepare something next week. It's an experiment how to present this. A real challenge for me.
Yeah, I enjoyed the class. Yeah.
You're one. Yeah. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying this because you did mention the words, you know, yam and niyam. And
yeah.
You've mentioned them in other Wednesday classes, and I've always wanted to ask a question about that.
Ask it.
Yeah. In the past, you have said that, you know, with respect to yama and niyama, there's no possibility of controlling your actions, your behavior with concerning yourself if you can't control your behavior towards others, which is why the yams come before the niyams.
Right.
And you know, I mean, just intuitively, it just seems like it would be the other way around. You know, so I really, you know, wasn't so...
The other way around. That you can control your mind and then control how you deal with others?
Yeah. It seems like you should start with yourself.
I'm talking about meditation, right? Well, you are controlling yourself. You're controlling yourself in relationship to others. If you can't stop your violence towards others, that's controlling yourself. It's controlling your mind.
Yeah.
But if you can't control the mind in relationship to others, then how are you going to control it in relationship to yourself? That's the grossest manifestation of an uncontrolled mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Avoiding others, you know, and then, well, you know, I have to say something else too, is that I'm talking in terms of yoga. Bhakti is independent. Because bhakti is not just dealing with the mind. It's dealing with the mercy of Krishna. And that can appear at any time by the mercy of the devotee. But when it does appear, then the mind will be controlled. But it doesn't have a prerequisite of purity. Because then that would mean that gyan causes bhakti. But bhakti is independent. Is that an agreement or something? Bhakti is independent.
Okay. Bye.
So, okay. Any other questions? Any other questions? Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Vrajaraja Deva Singh.
Hare Krishna, we'll see you for all Friday. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, I have one question.
Okay.
If somebody is very insensitive and they come to our domain and disturb us, like how we react in that situation?
What's that? Hare Krishna?
Okay. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah, what are you saying? What's your question?
Like if some people are very insensitive and they, even though we don't do anything to them, they come to our domain and they disturb us like a...
Yeah. Right. Well, obviously, that's going to be an impediment for their spiritual life. What's your question?
So how to react to situation?
How do we react with people? Well, we react always on the platform of the soul. We react in knowledge. We react in tolerance. We react in compassion. But that doesn't mean that we have to be harmed and exploited by people. But that we act in dharma. Dharma is according to the situation. So generally, when people are... treating us badly. There's many ways. When people are treating us badly or exploit us and things like that, on a highest platform, we can see it as karma. We can see ourselves as the cause. We can see God's will, just like Vidura. He was treated badly by Deodna. But even though he was treated badly by Deodna, even though he was treated badly by Deodana, he saw the will of God using him. So whatever happens to us is for us. It's in us. It's for us. We should learn from it. We don't have to respond with enmity. Even we can respond with compassion sometimes. Because people who do that are suffering. So why is God putting us in these situations? There must be lessons that we have to learn. And if it's a disturbance to our bhakti, and we have opportunity, we distance ourselves from those people also. But we shouldn't develop enmity, because we also don't behave properly. But when we don't behave properly, we want people to be overlooking, to understand the circumstances, to be kind. We want still God to show us a favor. When someone else is misbehaved, we want justice. We don't want God to give them mercy. So with dharmic, Haridas Thakur was beaten in 24 marketplaces. And he only saw his karma. So that answer your question?
Yes, Madam. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna, ask a question? Deeply thank the regulars for coming always on the classes, and this was a good test for me. I really, really have to think this deeply, how I can present bhakti to an outside audience. Okay, thank you all. Hare Krishna. I'll see you on Friday. Vanchakopa 3 Disha.